it was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Beringer, I buy Cabernet, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 78. This week, we feature Elisa Scovino of Paolo Scovino Wines from the Piedmont region of Italy.
From time to time, Italy comes to Milwaukee. On this program, we welcome from the Piedmont region of Italy, Elisa Scovino of Paolo Scovino Wines. Elisa was visiting Milwaukee during a whirlwind tour of dates in the U.S., somehow doing all this while harvest continued in Italy, a time of year when it's extra hard to be away from home. I'm here with Elisa Scovino of Paolo Scovino Winery, correct?
Yes.
That's good. Hello. That I got that right. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
And Elisa's visiting from Italy. Well, first of all, how long are you going to be here?
I'm here for a week. So I arrived yesterday in Chicago and then leaving from Boston on Friday. So every day it's a different city.
So you've got a pretty busy schedule then.
Yes. Busy, but short because we are in a harvest time in Italy. So I have to go back to work, the real work.
How did you escape during harvest?
Well, I don't know. I was forced to.
It was that time.
Yes.
Now, the name of the winery again is Paolo Scovino. I love the fact that Vino is in the name. You just can't help but enjoy that. And you were telling me that you're basically the fourth generation yourself?
Yes.
So give me a little bit of history of the winery.
Yeah. Well, the winery was started by my great-grandfather, Lorenzo, in 1921. With my grandfather Paolo, that was 18 at that point. We moved from Grinzane Cavour to Castiglione Falletto. Both are villages of the Barolo appellation. There are 11 villages that makes part of Barolo area. In Piemonte, so we are in the northwest of Italy by France. And we start as a mixed production farm. So we had vineyards and we had the fruit plants, we had animals at that point. We were growing grapes and bottling part of the wine that we were making, and part of the grapes were sold to the larger wineries. At that point, there were a few wineries, important name, but there was a lake of a very, very small producer that you can have today. And then my father, Enrico, started in 1951 when he was 10 years old. So it started quite young, and this year is the 61st harvest for him. So
wow, 61 harvests. That's pretty impressive.
It's quite unique, and to think a 10 years old baby that starts, and he started for passion, of course, and also because everybody was doing in the family. If I go back, I try to have a little bit of history of my ancestor, but I could not find any other kind of work. So then being in agriculture, so it was, I guess, part of the tradition. And he's the one really that developed the winery and started to focus just on the winemaking. So little by little, we stop with the plant fruit and with the animals. And we started to buy important vineyards, important cru, historical vineyards, where we could grow Nebbiolo for Barolo. And so today it's still, of course, a family winery business. There is my father, Enrico, my sister, Enrica, and myself. And we all collaborate happily together.
Well, I think that's something that wine does bring people together, but I think it also brings family together, don't you think?
Absolutely. As its own challenge, definitely, because in the past, as today, there were some conflicts, of course. Everybody has its own idea, its own character. So it's quite difficult, but it's also it's a beautiful to be part of this dream that started much longer time before, that is not about yourself, but is something bigger. And I grew up in this family where we were, you know, it was all about wine, and you were sitting at a table talking about wine with clients. I could really breathe wine in my air. So and also I've been quite lucky because I've seen a very interesting evolution. So I remember when it was much more difficult, and when the Barolo in general, the Barolo wines had much less exposure. So I remember the sacrifice my father and my mother did to obtain what they have today. So in that sense, I think you also give a value, you know, to what you have sacrificed, but done with passion, with love. So that is beautiful things I learned.
Well, and passion is naturally Italian, especially to us yes. Americans. Is all the fruit you're growing estate?
Or? Yes, absolutely. That's one of the points, very, very important, because I always say we are first grape growers and then we are wine maker, because everything starts there in the vineyard, the quality, from the quality of the fruits. And often we are very focused on, you know, the winemaking and temperature fermentation, length of maceration and kind of oak, but really few people are into what is happening in the vineyards, the temperatures, the season, forecast condition, and the work that you do, because it takes a long time to grow grapes. It takes from the pruning to September. It's 9 months, like the to give birth.
That's kind of what you're doing too. You are giving birth.
Yeah. And so it's a long way, and to arrive at the end with the beautiful grape, healthy grape, without disease, and it's not so easy as one can think. So
no, there's definitely nothing easy about it.
No. But yes, we vinify just the grapes that we produce. So we work with our team at the vineyards. There are high costs connected to the production, because it's about living there at least 9 months of the year, full time every day. And so
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work.
So I have actually two questions. One is, how much wine do you produce?
Well, we own 20 hectares. We produce 120,000 bottles, which would be 10,000 cases. We work majorly with the three local grapes from Piemonte, which are Dolcetto grapes, Barbera d'Alba grapes, and Nebbiolo, of course. Nebbiolo is like the king of our varietals. It gives in our region three wines that are 100% Nebbiolo grapes, and the wines are the Barolo, the Barbaresco, and the Roero. So these are the three wines based Nebbiolo based.
Now, just to go back, you said hectare, right?
Yes.
And that's metric, correct?
Exactly,
so
yes.
So how would that compare to an American acre, just so our listeners can get an idea of the size when you say hectare?
I think, I'm embarrassed to say, I don't know for sure, but 2.5 hectares, 1 hectare is 2.5 acres.
Okay, good. That gives
yeah.
an idea.
So,
then.
Yeah, it's more or less.
Is this mountainous property? What is the property itself, your property, like? Is it hilly? The property is, again, in the northwestern part of Italy.
Exactly.
Closer to France. Mm-hmm. So what is the property like? Is it hilly? Is it?
Well, Piemonte, the name of the region, say it in the name. So we are, pie means the feet, monte means mountain. So we are at the feet of the mountains, and we are quite close also to the sea. So we are basically 1 hour from the mountains where the Olympics game were in Turin, and we are like 1 hour from the sea, from Savona, and then there is a coast, the French coast, of course. It's quite the Lange region, which is a sub-region inside of Piemonte, is where the Barolo grows. Mm. It's quite hilly. So yes, we have a hill. We have castle on this hill. Each commune has its own. So it's a quite it's quite beautiful, especially the fall, like November, when the first 10 days of November normally. The color turns, and you have these hills that are painted of yellow and orange and red. They're beautiful. And very, very small villages. I come from Castiglione Falletto, where the winery is located, and it's 500 people.
That is a small village.
It's a small village, yes. So you know everybody, and you grow up with the same people. And the largest village is La Morra, which is 5,000 people. But you can imagine Barolo is really a small region. It's 11 communes. It's like 30 minutes drive distance from the south to the north of the region. So it's quick. And if you drive in a Italian way, it's even less. So you can do it in 15.
I'm making a note of that for when I come there.
Okay.
You were born into the business. Was this something you started as early as you could remember, or was it something you eventually came into as time went by? Were you working in the winery ever since you were little, or?
Well, since I was very young, I knew that I wanted to be in the wine business. So I remember to ask my father if I could escape the school and just learn from him to do the wine. That I think is quite cute when I think about it. I was like, I didn't want to go to school. I want to work. It has always been in my mind. So I really never thought different to do something else beside being an archaeologist for a while.
It's kind of related in a way. It's about the earth.
Yeah, I studied viticulture and enology. And so it was quite clear. I started to work then full-time in 2005, which has been also challenging in the beginning to start to find your own, you know, place and to interact with people that have definitely more experience than you have, and so to, you know, to stay humble and learn and be patient, because some learning experience doesn't take just you know, one day or two. So it takes really time. And also, I think more I go forward, the more I understand that making wine is not just to put your ego in what you do, but is to receive the heritage of your family, and to respect the soil, the character of the wine, and so it's a very delicate but important work that we do. So,
have you been to the United States before? Is this your first trip?
Yes, I've been before.
Do you think that maybe we have sort of a funny attitude towards alcohol, towards wine, where there's such an issue about people drinking it too young? And I'm not talking large quantities. I'm just talking about trying it.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I think so, in the sense that when you're very young, you know, you put your finger into the glass of wine, or you put the biscuits, you taste it, and so you start to enjoy the wine young, but of course in very, very, very moderate quantity, no? Then you mix it with the water, the sparkling water, then... No, before you really drink your first glass, you are maybe, you know, 16. Or I think it's important, and I speak about wine, I don't speak about other spirits, which I don't know very well about. But wine is not just alcohol. It's definitely, alcohol is the last part of it. It's really the last one. And I see it, and I say it because I see when people come to visit how much, you know, different people, different culture, but people that like connection with other people. So they come to meet the person that have grown that product, that really care for something unique and special, because the wine we make are very small production, and, you know. And they love life. They love the history that is behind those wines. They like to see it, the character of the winemaker, to look at the house where those wines come from, to pet the dog that they see every year in the courtyard. So it's about a relationship and a product that speaks about a place, a land, history. And so when they bring back the wines or they buy the wines, they are reconnected immediately to another place and to something that is, you know, very, very simple, because it's a product of the earth, but is passed in the hand of the human people and reach different places. It's always a great emotion to see your wine, you know, in other country when you arrive, and they actually use it as a way to beat the melancholy when you miss home. And I taste my wine, I feel home. So I always appreciate to retaste my wine everywhere.
You get to carry it with you. Yeah. That's the best part about it.
Yeah.
So is your wine readily available here in the United States?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's one of them, actually, the most important market for us. One of the first one to start to import and to appreciate. I see a lot of appreciation in this market of our wines, of the quality that we grow and pursue in the years, and a lot of support, really a lot of support. To start a business, to start the sales, especially back in the 80s, you know, it took good people promoting and speaking and supporting this idea. So, we love United States a lot.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
We have good friends. Now, it's not just a business. When I come here, I'm always like, I want to meet my friends and.
This is the end of part one of our interview with Elisa Scovino of Paolo Scovino Wines. You can download part two from lifebetweenthevines.com or from iTunes.